Daguerrella in Brisbane, Lucconi. Faya Daguerrella is an advisory software engineer of IBM Software Group. He's currently leading the effort to improve the runtime performance of WebSphere version 6.1. Prior to this, he was the team lead for WebSphere process choreographer responsible for performance and architecture of BPEL engine. He has over 10 years of experience in various fields of the computer industry, including object-oriented programming, application architecture, and performance. Vishal Nakandi is a software engineer of IBM Software Group. He's currently working on WAS 6.1 regression patrol and regression resolution. He led the WAS 6.1 tuning guide development effort. He has over 5 years of IT experience in application programming, system performance, and autonomic computing benchmarking. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server version 6.0 Events Performance Tuning Part 2. The webcast will include a PowerPoint presentation. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask attendees to answer a few quick questions via e-meeting polling. After that, the lines will open for a question and answer period. You can adjust the side and bottom scrolls to make the presentation more centered. If the view is still too small, under View, make sure to make your area full screen and Fit Shared Area to Window is unchecked, or just click on Default View. If you are in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation. If you are unable to access the e-meeting at this time, you may access the presentation from the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site by clicking View Presentation link or by going to the IBM.com site and type in 700-7824 in the search box. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Surya and Bhushan.
Thanks, Jennifer. This is the second part of the series on WebSphere Application Server Tuning. Even though the tuning information presented here is based mainly on WAS 6.0x versions, some of it may also be applicable to earlier versions as well. Based on some of the feedback from Part 1 presentation, we have also included some new performance features of recently released WebSphere 6.1 in this presentation. Slide 2, please.
Slide 3.
The slide 3 is more of agenda. The tuning topics for today include dynamic caching. This is a built-in service offered by WebSphere Application Server serving dynamic content and caching data. We will discuss how to leverage this performance feature in the applications to improve the performance. We'll go over 64-bit WebSphere. WebSphere started support for 64-bit first time in WebSphere 6.01 release and extended the support to most of the platforms in 6.02. We will discuss what are the advantages of 64-bit WAS and when to use this. We also talk about threading. Threading model in WebSphere has changed substantially in V6 to improve the performance and scalability. We will go over this new model in detail. As we go over to hardware, we will go over some of the hardware considerations that will affect the performance of enterprise applications. Recently released WebSphere 6.1 has significant performance improvements to the tune of about 40 to 50% compared to WAS 6.02. We will highlight some of the major features that are contributing to this performance. Slide 4. On slide 4, we have a chart that shows the dynamic caching, the performance impact of dynamic caching. It showcases the performance improvements that we get through dynamic caching. The application used here is our standard JDE benchmark called Trade. The performance is almost doubled, as you can see here, with dynamic caching. One more point here is the performance improvements that are driven into 6.0 are significantly higher, around 40 to 60% compared to V5. So V6 has the high-performing dynamic cache feature that we can use in our applications. Slide 5. What is dynamic caching? Dynamic caching is one of those features that differentiates WebSphere from its competition. If you have your company's internet website, for instance, as each time you start the browser, it goes to the home page, so it can be a best candidate to use the dynamic caching to load the web page faster. We may not be able to cache the whole page, though, but we can cache the significant portions of it to reduce the response time. The WebSphere development team often refers to this service simply as Dynacache. There is no time-consuming installation and integration work needed to activate the Dynacache, as it perfectly integrates into JTE infrastructure. Dynacache can handle complex associations between fragments that are used across multiple operations. The caching can be done at multiple layers, like the servlet JSPs, web services, both server-side and the client-side, and the Java objects. Slide 6. Okay, what are the major design features on the dynamic caching? There are two ways you can enable the caching to your applications. The first method is through an XML policy file called the cache-spec-XML, and it can be used to define the cache policies for the application. Developers also can integrate caching in the application using the caching API, for example, cacheable servlet and cacheable command, and this is much more useful for the developers during the time of developing an application. The cache can also be distributed through cluster members through data replication service. This is a JMS-based service that will enable us to distribute the cache to the cluster members in a cluster. It can the WebSphere Dynacache can also interact with external caches, including the fragment cache residing in the web server plugin. I'm going off to slide 7. There are some new features that are introduced in the Dynacache for version 6. There are multiple improvements both on the functional and the performance front. And now the support has been extended to struts and tiles and web services client caching. Support for multiple instances of object cache and servlet and JSP cache within a single server. There is a disk offload feature where we can push data to the disk if the allocated cache is full. Even though writing to disk may not be a performance-friendly option, if we use a faster disk, the performance difference between the memory and the disk option may not be too much. There are improvements to the cache monitoring tool, mainly to support the to have the multiple cache support. Slide 8. The dynamic caching, of course, improves the performance, but as the dynamic caching predominantly operates in the JVM heap, we have to consider the memory impact of using this feature. Here is a simple formula to determine the footprint cost with Dynacache. We need about 256 bytes extra for each cache entry, so if we have a cache elements of each 15 KB, and we have around 2,000 elements in the cache, we are looking at spending around 30 MB in the heap for caching these all elements. V6 dynamic cache service also provides a distributed map cache. Using DMAP caching, a JTE application can define a unique instance of the dynamic caching. Dynamic cache, and then access those instances to distribute cached object across servers. Command bin caching is more expensive than the DMAP caching, so better to use the DMAP caching to get more performance boost. On a cache hit in a command bin caching, caching engine needs to make a copy of the data in the cache, whereas in the DMAP caching, when we have a cache hit in a DMAP caching, a reference to the data is returned instead of a copy. Slide 9, I will go over some of the best practices that we have to follow using the dynamic caching. Consideration for caching should start at design phase. Even though it's possible to develop policies to implement caching for existing applications, you can get the best mileage out of this feature if you can start thinking about this and inputting this at the design phase. Designing the pages to suit the dynamic caching is the best option. Like, for instance, servlet JSP caching for frequently cached, frequently visited, expensive page elements, and also we can differentiate between stateful elements and the general use element. For instance, you can make these general use elements more cacheable. DMAP caching, of course, performs better than command bin caching due to the better cache hit performance in the DMAP, so that that will give us better performance in dynamic caching. And leverage the new caching structure. Try to use the multiple internal cache support that we have. Also, split the objects into different caches to more efficiently distribute the cache data. So the key to this, key to success, and getting the best performance with dynamic cache is to look at your web page and see the objects that you can that won't change so often that you can cache effectively, and you know cache those objects. So splitting that into cacheable and non-cacheable, and using the dynamic cache at the design phase is the best way. So this is about the dynamic cache. Now I will turn over to Bhushan to talk about 64-bit and other sections. Please, Bhushan.
Thank you, Surya. With more and more 64-bit hardware coming up, let's see how WebSphere Application Server performs on it. Now, WAF 601 supports Linux on x86 and Power platform, also HP US on Itanium platform. And in WAF 602, we supported additional 64-bit environments like AIX on Power and Windows on x86. So WebSphere 64-bit version leverages all the features provided by 64-bit platform. It provides capability to use Java Hive much larger than 2 gigs, which is limit of 32-bit application. So the max Java Hive can go to 2^48, which I guess is 256 terabytes. Also, IBM's JVM JIT compiler has enhancement for 64-bit platform. It recognizes the 64-bit platform and generates optimized code to directly leverage the extra registers and extended memory instructions available on 64-bit machines. This extended machine instruction set supports high precision computation. However, just like two sides of coin, WAF 64-bit can enhance or hurt performance depending on nature of application. If application can exploit the feature provided by 64-bit platform. Slide 12. The shortcoming with 32-bit platform is process can have max heap size of 2 gigs, and applications having big working sets can yield significant performance from 64-bit platform. Here, applications might be retrieving big objects from database and keep them in Dyna cache. The example scenario can be car dealership or real estate, where the user is browsing sites and high-quality images are retrieved from database. In this case, if sufficient heap is available, dynamic caching can be used extensively to get much better performance. Second scenario where WAF 64-bit can help improve performance are applications having intensive computation. Example, security applications have security algorithms performing encryption, decryption, and authentication. These algorithms are computationally intensive. WAF 64-bit uses the extra registers and instruction sets to optimize code and improve performance. Thus, applications heavy in statistics, security, encryption, simulations can benefit from high-precision computation support on 64-bit WAF. To talk about downside of WAF 64-bit, application's overall memory footprint is high. Here, all memory references are 64-bit wide, twice the address of the references on 32-bit machine. So if your machine is constrained on memory, it is not wise idea to go for 64-bit. Also, WAF 64-bit fills up L2, L3 cache quickly. This is because hardware processor cache size is same for both 32-bit and 64-bit application on 64-bit machine. However, for 64-bit application, the cache line is twice big. So the cache entries are reduced, reducing the cache efficiency, which can hurt performance. So what should be done for the applications that do not benefit from 64-bit feature? Let's talk on next slide, on slide 13. Applications that do not benefit from 64-bit feature can run with full native performance on 32-bit version of WebSphere on Power and x86 platform, and there won't be any performance degradation. WAF is available in both 32-bit and 64-bit edition on 64-bit platform, and both WAF 32-bit and 64-bit installs can coexist on 64-bit machine. Also, WAF 32-bit on 64-bit OS can provide incremental greater heap size than that is possible on 32-bit platform. Example, on Linux, 3 gigs heap size is possible. So applications that are performing good on WASP 32-bit can further get benefit from this additional heap size on 64-bit OS. Now let's quickly summarize on when to go for WASP 64-bit and when to stick to WASP 32-bit. We are on slide 14. Here are some tips for deciding if I should go for 32-bit platform or 64-bit platform, and also if I should go for WASP 32-bit or 64-bit on 64-bit platform. If your application has big working set and needs heap much greater than 2 gigs for higher performance, then go for WASP 64-bit. Also, if your applications are computationally intensive, like security applications, like web services security, statistics, simulation, then leverage the 64-bit support for high precision computation and enhanced performance. On the other side, if your applications are performing good on WASP 32-bit, however needs a little more help, little more heap higher than 2 gigs, then let's say somewhere between 2 and 3 gigs to improve performance, then go to WASP 32-bit on 64-bit platform. And if your 64-bit machine is relatively low on L2 and L3 cache, then go for WASP 32-bit on 64-bit platform. This concludes WASP 64-bit session. I hope this information will help to make decisions on when to go for WASP 64-bit on 64-bit platform. If someone wants to get more details, there is a nice white paper available on WebSphere performance site. Slide 15. Now let's talk about the new threading model available in WebSphere version 6 and its tuning. Transport Channel Service is new feature in WebSphere version 6 that manages client connections and I/O processing for HTTP and JMS requests. This service was developed to provide common networking service, protocol, and I/O operation for WebSphere. This new I/O service is based on new non-blocking I/O feature available in Java. So your I/O is processed asynchronously, and web container thread is no longer associated with specific client connection. This provides highly scalable foundation to WebSphere request processing. Non-blocking I/O feature enables large number of client connections to be multiplexed into smaller set of WebSphere threads for request processing. Let's see more about what happens when client connections increases in burst. Slide 17. Here in upper half, we see for arriving traffic, throughput is X requests per second and response time is Y requests. Now in lower half, incoming traffic increases in magnitude and web container has same number of threads. We see throughput remains at its plateau and response time increases accordingly, which is expected naturally. However, here it is unlikely to see connection refused errors at high loading. In our lab testing, we have seen up to 2,000 clients being serviced by 50 web container threads in stable condition. So under burst conditions, WebSphere thread model is bound to remain stable. Now let's talk a bit about tuning of transport channel service. Okay, slide 18. There is not much tuning to do with transport channel service. Transport channel service incorporates autonomic tuning and configuration. Still, some of the key differences between version 6 transport channel service and version 5 request handling using HTTP transport are: for version 5, the number of web container threads should be greater than the sum of maximum number of expected keep alive connections and TCP backlog. For WASP 6, as we mentioned, no tuning is required to increase the maximum number of client connections. The number of threads in web containers should be configured to optimize the concurrency requirement of the application. Generally, 5 to 10 threads per CPU is sufficient to keep all processors busy and provide the best performance. For V6, all connections by default maintain keep alive. Prior version of WebSphere maintained keep alive on only 90% of connections to prevent client starvation. Now the non-blocking architecture in WASP 6.0 removes this limitation. Since client connections are no longer tied to web container thread in a one-to-one mapping, keep alive can be maintained for all client connections without client starvation. Response buffer size can be increased for websites with larger HTTP responses. The default buffer size is 32K and is sufficient for most applications. However, if HTTP response is larger than 32K, the response will be chunked and sent to clients in multiple TCP write operations. Slide 19. Funnel threading principle. I hope many of you have heard this term. Basically, what it says that when we go through environment that we use, like the HTTP server, app server, EJBs, data sources, we generally use fewer and fewer concurrency resources. For example, IHS serves static contents out of HTTP server, so we need more threads for that, in addition to forwarding requests to app server and returning dynamic content processed by application server. The mileage may vary depending on application. For example, applications with not much presentation logic or display logic funnel might be wider. Use this principle to configure different thread pools. Slide 20, IHS 1.3 and 2.0. We had some changes over here. IHS 2.0 is a bit different model on Unix. Previously, we opened one process per thread, so there were lots of daemons running and flying inside the processes. Now we open a few multi-threaded processes to support the incoming traffic. The tuning here is to figure out happy distribution of processes and threads per process to come up with maximum concurrency we need. Slide 21. Let's talk about tuning to connect to database. JDBC driver. The universal JDBC driver performs much better than the legacy or CLI JDBC driver. This is mainly due to significant code path reductions, reduced dependency on JNI, and optimizations not available on legacy CLI JDBC driver architecture. Between universal driver type 4 and type 2, performance varies from workload to workload, and the main factor for performance difference is mostly related to amount of communication each workload creates between data server and app server. The more communication, the larger advantage of driver type 4. Note, if database resides on same machine as the application server, then type 2 is recommended setup and should yield better performance. Otherwise, type 4 driver is best suited for client-server environment. Also, JDBC data source configuration can have significant performance impact. For example, the connection pool size and prepared cache statement should be sized based on number of concurrent requests being processed. For database connection pool, we have seen lots of time spent in tuning database connection pooling. However, most of time it ends up tuning database. So if you see things backing up in database connection pool and response time is bad, problem is either with network or with database itself. To tune database connection pool, start with min-max pool size as 1 and 30. If connection pool fills up, increase the pool size. If it fills up again, the problem might be some slow query or so. Here we might need database optimization, say adding index or something like that. So this is the tricky thing to deal with. WebSphere depends on many other external factors like database network to perform best. Prepared statement cache. Tune prepared statement cache using Tivoli Performance Viewer. If you see cache eviction, increase the cache size. The default prepared statement cache size is 10. For performance testing of trade applications, in our lab, we configure this cache to 60. Slide 22 now. Let's talk about some of the hardware considerations that will help to improve performance of J2E applications. Slide 23. Maximize L2, L3 cache size. WebSphere performance is more sensitive to L2, L3 cache than other app server vendors. Or I should say, WebSphere takes better advantage of L2, L3 cache as compared to competitors. Bumping up L2, L3 cache is pretty inexpensive configuration options. However, remember, L2 is not something which can be upgraded on existing hardware. You have to order the machine with this option as it is highly integrated with CPU. In our lab, we have seen significant improvement in performance by taking machine to next level of L2, L3 cache. Slide 24 now. Here are some configurations on P-series hardware which can improve performance. If you are on AIX 5.3 on Power 5 machines, definitely enable SMT, which is symmetric multi-threading. SMT on Power 5 chips gives significant performance boost as compared to one from SMT on Power 4 chips. Our lab testing with trade benchmark had shown 40% performance improvement over one with no SMT. Page sizes. AIX version 5.3, maintenance level 4, provides rich support for an application to utilize different page sizes provided by the Power 5 Plus system. Using larger virtual memory page size for an application memory can significantly improve performance due to hardware efficiencies associated with the larger pages. AIX version 5.3 by default has a page size of 4K. Power 5 Plus systems provide medium page size support, which are of size 64K. 64K pages are intended to be general purpose and are very easy to use. It is expected that many applications will see performance benefits between 10 to 13% when using 64K pages rather than 4K pages. No system configuration changes are necessary to enable to use 64K pages, and the size of the pool of 64K page frame on the system is dynamically and fully managed by AIX. Large page size support. Large page size are of size 16 MB. These pages are intended to be used only in very high performance environment, and AIX will not automatically configure a system to use these page sizes. System administrator must configure AIX to use these page sizes and must configure the number of pages of these page sizes. So administrator should know the memory footprint of the applications that is going to use these large pages. Also, large pages configuration changes needs the system reboot. To summarize the page size configuration, 16 MB large pages are intended to be used in very high performance environment, whereas 64K pages are general purpose, easy to use, and most workloads will likely to see a benefit by using them rather than 4K page sizes. VAS 6 tuning guide talks more about this setting, and if someone is interested, I can point to a white paper which talks about these configurations and pros and cons. Now Surya will take us through some of the new performance features with WebSphere version 6.1, which is recently released. Surya?
Thanks, Pushan. The performance features that I'm going to talk about, it's like just at a higher level. We are actually going to have an extensive webcast on V6.1 sometime next month. So even though the performance improvements in V6.1 came from across all components, I'm going to highlight these major features as they are responsible for bulk of this improvement. In V6.1, WebSphere provides a special operational mode called the lightweight local mode, which can improve the performance of entity beings. The IBM developer kit for Java version 5 marks a significant step forward for Java users with advances in the expressive power of the language, as well as the major enhancements to the execution technology. In threading model area in V6.1, the WebSphere uses a true asynchronous I/O or AIO instead of NIO to improve the performance and scalability. In 6.1, the runtime programming model for threading called the bounded buffer has been completely revamped to reduce the latency and improve the performance. This is an advanced topic, and we will discuss some tuning parameters that are externalized. I'm on slide 27. A lightweight local mode is patterned somewhat after the plain old Java object or POSO entity model introduced in EJB 3.0 specification. Using lightweight local mode, you can obtain some of the performance advantages of this POSO entity model without having to convert your existing EJB 2X application code to the new POSO model. Subject to the conditions that I mentioned here, lightweight local mode may be applied to both the container-managed persistence and the bean-managed persistent entity types. Where are we getting these improvements from? There is about a 30 to 40% reduction in pre-invoke and post-invoke instruction usage, resulting in better performance in performance invoking the EJB methods. that's where we are getting the performance with this new EJB mode. It uses a shunt facade pattern, and this can be set using the application server tooling at the extensions pane of the bean properties. So you can select the bean of your choice to set this option. The major conditions to use this is the bean should implement an EJB local interface. So the EJB 1.1x beans may not be able to take advantage of this. No security authorization is defined, should be defined on the entity bean, and the classes of the calling bean and the called entity bean were loaded by the same JVM. Entity bean methods do not call the WebSphere specific internationalization and work area service. More information you can find in the Info Center 461. Slide 28. Apart from, this is JDK file, apart from new features such as the generics, autoboxing, enumerated types, etc., that will enable the programmers to achieve higher software quality. Now, the main purpose of IBM JDK file is superior Java application execution performance. Performance improvements that are made in JDK file are across the three major parts, that is the IBM virtual machine, the just-in-time compiler, and the garbage collection technology. All these three areas were improved. JIT compiler technology gives now a superior Java application execution performance, and we maximize the performance with minimum runtime overhead. This has become possible with various optimization, like multiple optimization levels, multiple recompilations of the same method, many new optimizations that are built into it. Dynamic observation of the execution of code via profiling to aggressively improve the hard code. Now JIT compiles bytecode asynchronously on a separate thread. There are four different policies that are with varying characteristics for the garbage collection. They are like the first one, optimized for throughput. Now, the flat heap collector can be used if your applications are focused on maximum throughput. The second option, second garbage collection policy, is the optimized for pause time. This is a flat heap collector with concurrent mark and sweep to minimize the GC pause times. And the third one is the generational concurrent that we use for SpecJAV server. It divides heap into nursery and tenure segments, providing fast collection for short-lived objects. It can provide maximum throughput at the same time with minimal pause times. The fourth GC option that we have in 6.1 JDK 5 is the subpool. This is a flat heap technique to help increase the performance on multiprocessor systems. This is commonly used for systems that are like greater than 8, like it's available on IBM P-Series and Z-Series. In a nutshell, JDK file, we try to have the default tuning parameters as the high performing across the board. So there are very, very few extra tuning that we need to do leverage this high performance. But it's again up to us to decide which garbage collection policy that we have to use that is suitable for our application. Slide 29. Asynchronous AIO or IO or AIO. WAS 6.1 includes significant enhancements in network layer IO technologies for the application server, just as Bhushan mentioned about NIO in WAS 6.0. We are now replacing that NIO with AIO in 6.1. Mainly to leverage two true native asynchronous I.O. capabilities of many platforms, including the AIX, Z-Series, Linux, Windows, and HP Solaris. These native I.O. platform capabilities far exceed Java NIO in performance and scalability. The IBM-designed native libraries are included with WAS for supported platforms to take advantage of this platform-specific native I.O. capabilities. What are these native I.O. capabilities that are there? We have, for instance, these are the different libraries that we have, like PolSet in AIX, CC Pol in Linux, Async I.O. in Z-Series, I.O. completion ports in Windows. These are the native I.O. features that are existent for a long time. And with V6.1, we are trying to exploit that and use those native libraries to get the I.O. Done, which is much faster than the 6.0 NIO feature. Slide 30, This is a new boundary buffer tuning. This is part of the runtime that has been rewritten to reduce the latency and improve the performance. This is an advanced tuning and should not be changed unless really required for a specific OS and application. The operation of boundary buffer, generally the access to the boundary buffer is most efficient if the buffer is neither full nor empty. Normally we'll make sure that condition exists by adjusting the web container or ARP thread pool. Even after adjusting that, if we see that we are not able to efficiently use the runtime in our specific workload on a specific platform, there are some advanced tuning options that are mentioned in the tuning guide for 6.1 that we can attempt to further tune the runtime. Again, I want to caution here, because this is again an advanced option. Caution should be used. Otherwise, we may end up in a situation hurting the performance. The operation of the boundary buffer can be controlled through five parameters that are specified in the following in the tuning section here. The first one is the COM IBM WSL boundary buffer spin stake. This is a JVM parameter. We have spin stake, yield take, spin put, and yield put. Well, what is the spin stake parameter? Spin stake specifies the number of attempts a web container thread will make to take a request from the buffer before it suspends and then kills. A value of 2 to 8 is shown to perform better across different operating systems, but the default value is 4 here. Again, the spin put is for the put selector that puts the work into the buffer. Yield take specifies if a thread yields the CPU to other threads between subsequent attempts to take an item from the buffer. Again, we have an yield put does the same thing, putting the data into the buffer. There is another option called the boundary buffer wait. This wait time specifies the maximum duration that a request might unnecessarily be delayed if the buffer is completely full or empty in the presence of an idle putter or taker thread. So the default value is 10,000, and it should be fine for most of the situations unless you have a big system where you are seeing the default value is not suitable for your application. Slide 31. To summarize what we have discussed today, dynamic caching can provide significant performance improvement. This feature should be considered at the design phase of the application. A WAS 64-bit can enhance or hurt the performance depending on the nature of the application. So if an application can exploit this feature provided by 64-bit platform, we can use it and get the maximum performance out of it. WAS 6.0 transport channel service stabilizes the web container even under bursty conditions and the thread pools can be tuned based solely on the application concurrency requirements. Significant performance gains in universal JDBC or the JCC drivers over the legacy CLI JDBC XA driver. Type 4 JDBC drivers, of course, generally performs faster than Type 2 JDBC driver. And WebSphere runs significantly better with higher L2-L3 cache. Now, going to some of the references, product resources that we have on slide 33. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on the support pages points you to webcast and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up and learning quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. So this concludes the presentation here, so I will we can open this up for a question and answer session.
Thank you, Sarah and Brishan, for a great presentation. At this point, Kevin, we would like to open up the lines for questions. I will now turn the call to our presenters.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off so that your signal can reach us. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. We'll pause for just a moment to give everyone an opportunity to signal. And we'll take our first question from Emily Starwine with AT&T. Please go ahead.
This is Balanan Pinyan, Emily from Emily's Kabi from AT&T. I have a question. Is that there was a sentence that was said as that the page size would be 16 MB and by default it is 4K. He also said that the sysadmins have to tune those parameters, which increases the efficiency by 15%. I was told that he would give us pointers to the white paper. Is it possible to provide us the link?
Yeah, definitely. Can you shoot me an email and I will send you? It's on the IBM site and it's very nice paper which talks about like when to go for 16, when to go for those medium pages, large pages.
What email should we send to? Who? What's the address?
It should be on the presentation, slide 1.
Lokande@us.ibm.com.
Yep.
Or Surya@us.ibm.com.
So we can send it to either one?
Yeah,
yep.
Either one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Once again, star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. We go next to the site of Chris Bozeman Clark with IBM. Please go ahead.
Actually, it's going to be James Woods from State Farm.
Hi, I'm James Woods from State Farm. I have three quick questions for you. I'll just list them real quickly. The first is the Dynacache from page 9. There is a statement that says exploit caching API through the distributed map services. I'd like more information on that.
Yep.
The second question is the plugin performance from page 18. We're on 5.1 right now and are getting ready to move to 6.02, and we're looking at tuning the HTTP transport. Unfortunately, the thing we cannot do, even though we make changes to the plugin, is actually segregate out maybe the saturation of the physical plugin itself separate from the HTTP daemon process. Is there a way to do that so we can see if there's a bottleneck in the plugin or if the process itself is a bottleneck? And then the third question is, on page 28, we're looking forward into the future for WAS 6.1 and talking about JDK 5.0. And this one is new because it's not the Sun IBM or the Sun JDK. It's actually your own IBM's JDK. And I haven't seen a diagnostic guide for that yet. Is there one available? Those are my three questions.
Okay. Thanks for your questions. I'll answer the first and the last one first. The first question on page 9 about the Dynacache APIs, so yes, this is, there are two ways you can have the Dynacache enabled. Of course, if you have an existing application, you can create a policy file and do that. But the second option, that which is useful if you're a developer and trying to, use the built-in, you want to put the caching mechanism into your application. Yes, we have the APIs that are externalized. You can, if you have WebSphere, you can use them with distributed map services, and these are like any other API that you use. You can use them, import them into your application, and use them. And we do have the facility that in trade we do use distributed DMAP caching, the API again, the thing here is once you use that API into your application, it's up to you to how you want to enable and if you want to disable. So that feature you have to put it in your application as well. And there is a good paper I can actually point you to. Maybe if you can just send me your email, I can just send you an architecture paper, and it will give you an insight into how effectively you can use this, Dynacache with APIs. The third question, talking about the JDK 5.0, this is IBM. Built JVM, which is different from Sun's JDK, but Of course, we follow the same interface, everything. So we do have a diagnostic guide available. Maybe, you know, I can send you that as well, you know, if you can shoot me an email.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
About plug-in performance, can I get back to you? I won't have the answers right now, but I will have to understand your scenario better to help with, like, what we can do to improve the plug-in
sure.
performance.
The scenario is if we modify the threads, the thread size, or the queue, I guess, on the HTTP daemon itself, the HTTP comp file, you modify the max client size, which is effectively changing the server limit as well as the threads per child. So that's allowing what can go through the web server, but then the plugin itself that passes those requests through the URI to the actual appropriate web application server can be tuned in tandem with the web container and IHS. So we can effectively say how many threads or number of connections we want to be physically passed to a specific application server. And those connections are, like you talked about, the Max Connect backlog as well as Max Connection, and then the thread pool. So those types of things we actually want to separate out and identify what the saturation point is for the physical queue of the plugin as well as the physical queue of the web container and the HTTP process itself to see where a bottleneck exists and how to tune those appropriately.
Okay. Like, can I get back to you next week and then we can, like, this won't be a straightaway answer? Like, I have your email ID. Like, if you don't mind, then next week we can discuss about it.
That's fine.
Yep. I will get back to you next week.
Thank you.
Again, that's star one if you'd like to ask a question. We'll go next to Anand Iyagari with Fidelity Investments. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. I have two questions. One is referring to page 6, where we mentioned caching mechanisms and policy-based and API-based. We're currently using 5.1, or 5.1. I was wondering the equivalent of this would be EH cache, perhaps? I don't know, maybe, because we are trying to programmatically do caching, and then the reason I ask is that when you say dynamic caching and the example that you provided on page 8, what if we hit a much higher limit? Because I'm doing a load testing, and then I hit a bottleneck, and I could see memory issues. You gave an example of a 15 kilobyte each and 2,000 cache entries, but we're going a much higher value. Obviously, the memory is the limit, right?
Yeah, there are two things here. Of course, if you're in V5.1, V6 we have much more improved caching mechanism than 5.1.
Mm-hmm.
So the caching has been split. In 5.1, I think you have a one big cache, right? You know, then you normally with the command being caching, you know, you just bring everything in and then you have to copy that.
Right.
So you will be better off in using the APIs and the DMAP caching in 6.0, but for V5.1, you can still use the cache spec XML to distribute your objects for caching. For the second S-memory question on page 8, yes, that is it is a concern. That's the reason why we have this disk on, a hash map on disk, or DOTP we call. That feature is there, and the key here, it will be, I can understand that your objects are much higher in, much bigger than the 15 KB here. So
right.
If that is the case, if, that's the reason why we mentioned here about the memory considerations. It is, of course, we are improving the performance, but it's not coming cheap, right?
Right.
So we, again, if you want to use the hash table on, so if you want to offload this to the disk, then make sure you have the best possible disk, a faster disk. We did have, a situation and a customer trying to achieve the exact same thing that you are trying here. We tried to offload to a faster disk, and we observed the performance. The key is once you offload to the disk, right, the problem is how fast you can retrieve it, right?
Exactly.
So there, I think we did not see a whole lot of difference in the memory versus the disk. Of course, the disk will be little slower, but it's not awfully slower there. So key here in your situation will be to go with a better, faster disks. And normally you go with like 1 gig disks, like multiple disks.
And just to add, like, you can define some invalidation rules to automate the invalidation of cache entries.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you want to get more information, there are articles on developer books which talk about how to invalidate cache entries when you're reaching your limit.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're trying to work on an optimizing of the cache elements itself. Currently, meaning we determine the cache size of the objects coming in. Now we're trying to determine the number of cache elements in the cache itself so we can get a reasonably decent optimization and hence the testing of that.
Yeah, the key here again will be to split your objects accordingly, right? You know, which can be cached. And then, that's how you can save, the object size will be reduced now, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
The constraint now is we're cutting everything into entire in one hit. They're trying to optimize. It's more hops to the database. We're trying to reduce that, but the price you're paying is more caching, and hence the performance hit on the that part actually.
Yep. Then adding to that again, you are on v5.1 between 5.1 and 6.0, right? You don't have the DMAP caching in 5.1.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So when you are we will be doing a copy of the data in the cache. So that is again, it will take memory too, right?
Exactly. So, yeah. I have another question now, if you permit me. Page 29, when you're saying new performance features for WAF 6.1. Now, the concern, when you say native I/O platform capabilities far exceed Java and I/O and performance and scalability, which is great, but are you not limiting yourself instead of portability, which being the key thing with Java, we are kind of sacrificing that by going to native I/O libraries or native platforms?
No, we are not limiting here, because what we are doing is we are trying to exploit on the platform that you're running your application, WebSphere, right?
Okay.
So, because these native AIO capabilities are already there, much before 6.1. Right?
Sure.
But the only thing what, we are trying to do now is instead of using the NIO package coming from Java itself, right?
Yeah.
We are trying to, double it down to and exploit the existing, because the native code knows, it knows better, how to do the IO than the Java code. So we are trying to delegate the work to the lower level libraries that are already built in, and they will perform better because they're already optimized for a specific platform.
Okay.
So when your question of is it platform dependency? No, it is not, because the Java part of this is applicable for all the platforms. The only thing that is different here is once we make a call to the lower level, that's where, who is performing that. For AIX, use the poll set. For Linux, you use the epoll.
Okay. And just to add, for some reason, if asynchronous I/O is not working, or you can anytime shift to NIO. It's just like renaming libraries and you are back to the Java NIO.
Okay.
So that transfer or migration won't be an issue.
Question regards your explanation, Surya. The reason I ask that is, if I were to port an application from, say, Solaris WebSphere to IBM WebSphere, I may not be able to compare apples to apples, right? Because the native I/O in AIX may be better than Solaris or worse than that, perhaps. It's a difficult comparison. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes, you have a point there. Again, yes, here, you know, that's, again, the comparison between, you know, which hardware is better and, you know, what.
So I know you can go on that, but I've not reached a conclusion.
So this is our vested interest here will be to, you know, make WebSphere faster on the applications on the platform that you're running, you know, as far as possible.
Thanks for that.
Again, it's star one to ask a question. We go next to Yu Shin Zhu with the Federal Reserve Bank, Chicago. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have two quick questions. The first question is on slide number 30 about the tuning. A gentleman talks about three parameters. One is the strength take, yield take, and the weight. How do we specify those three parameters, and where do we specify it over?
Okay. It's again. I want to caution you. I will explain, you know, what it is here. But this is again an advanced tuning because it will directly connect to the underlying runtime for WebSphere.
Okay.
What we do here, like the what is the bounded buffer? You know, what it does is like when we send a request from HTTP request comes in and there is an input selector, an inbound selector, you know, that goes out and puts the request into a buffer.
Okay.
Right? And then the web container and the ARP, you know, the web, they both will listen on this buffer and try to take the work and then, you know, go ahead and, you know, further process it for you.
Okay.
So the bounded buffer is the key part of the runtime here.
Hmm.
So what we never had this piece externalized before 6.1.
Hmm.
Now what we did was like, you know, we expanded. I mean, we externalized this to you know, make it more tunable.
Hmm.
So the key here will be, again, as I mentioned, first thing you should check is web container and ARP thread pool, you know, it just that, whether if you're seeing a bottleneck in bounded buffer.
Mm-hmm.
If you pass beyond that, yes, you do have, you know, these five parameters, three I have mentioned here. There are like two more similar for the put, like the spins put and yield put,
mm-hmm.
right? These are all the JVM arguments.
Okay.
That you specify, like a D parameter, right? You know, you just specify this when for your application, and then it will change the bounded buffer's default value when you start the app server.
Oh, okay.
Right. When you start the app server, you know, you specify this JVM argument, and then it will, you know, overwrite the default values. Again, with our testing in the lab, the spin stake, basically what it does is it's the number of attempts a web container thread, you know, it will make to take a request from the buffer, because once we put the request in there, it will try to go and, you know, look for the, you know, work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is the number of spins that we are putting there, you know, like four is ideal, but in some situations, like a major, like a P-series 32 failures,
mm-hmm.
some other big machine, at that point, you know, you see that, well, I need to enable the spinning more, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the spinning on the lock is not, you know, enough there, or you are going too often to the bounded buffer.
Mm-hmm.
So those are that is one thing. And the yield take, again, you know, like to if the thread yields on the CPU for to other threads, you know,
mm-hmm.
between subsequent attempts to make an to take an item from the buffer,
mm-hmm.
You can either by default it is you know, false, it won't yield, but you can make it as you know, yes, yield take. You can yield. You can explicitly specify, yes, I want to yield here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wait is the third one. You know, it is again the duration that a request might unnecessarily be delayed if the buffer is completely full or empty.
Mm-hmm.
So it is like a 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So you can adjust that as well. These are the JVM arguments. You have to be very cautious, though.
I see. And the second question is about a JDK 5.0. Basically, when people mention JDK, I know when we install IBM WebSphere product on, you know, the platforms Linux or Solaris, IBM WebSphere comes with the Java, and also the OS like SunSolaris has a default Java. So the people mentioned that the IBM SDK and Sun SDK, are we talking about the same thing, or IBM SDK is developed based on Sun SDK?
Well, you know, Sun is one who is actually coming up with the specification, right?
Okay.
For the JDK.
All right.
So, if Sun comes up with, let's say, Java 5.0 or
yeah.
JDK 5.0, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And IBM, what it does is, you know, it will follow the same so that there won't be any incompatibility issues here.
I see.
So it will have the same API support, but in-house, IBM has its own JDK development team.
Okay.
What it does is, like, you know, JVM, finally, the performance, you know, comes from three different parts, right?
Okay.
One is the virtual machine,
yeah.
The JIT, just-in-time compiler, and
yeah.
The garbage collection policy, right? You know,
okay.
how best your, you know, GC can, you know, perform.
Okay.
So every vendor tries to follow the model, but try to, you know, implement, for instance, you have a JRocket, you know, some other vendor.
Mm-hmm.
So they will try to implement their virtual machine much faster than, you know, of course, the competitor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we try to, you know, take this and then improve the underlying layers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we feel that, yes, we are following the programming model, but at the same time, you know, when you're deploying your application in our virtual machine, yes,
mm-hmm.
we are performing the best.
I see.
So that's the reason why, you know, all the IBM platforms come mm-hmm. with IBM
Java.
Java, yes.
Okay.
And then HP and Sun, you know, those are the vendors, they have their own Java.
Okay, but basically all the IBM product like the WebSphere application server, it basically uses IBM SDK, right, Java?
Yes, all the, like, Linux, Windows.
And
all these platforms except Sun and, you know, Sun, the Solaris and the HP.
Except the Sun, Solaris and the HP, what do you mean?
Those two platforms have their, you know, Sun's Java, and,
yes.
you know, they come with their own JDK.
Yes, yes, but I noticed that we are basically using Sun, Solaris and IBM WebSphere application server. I noticed that WebSphere application server does not use Sun default Java on OS. It uses its own Java. Is that a correct statement?
No. On Sun platform, if you're running WebSphere, like, you know, we depend on Sun's JDK to run our apps.
What do you mean you depending on Sun?
Because Sun's hardware comes, you know, when we buy a Sun machine, right, you know, it will come its own JDK. So we support that as a WebSphere because, you know, we have to run on all the JDKs. So we support that and we run. So the performance of WebSphere application is as fast as the underlying JDK supplied by the vendor.
Well, I basically did some testing on test server. I can basically remove the default slash Java and everything still works. Well,
okay. Surya, this is Piyush. If I might interrupt for a second.
Sure, I'm sorry.
Hi, this is Piyush Agarwal. I'm also on the performance team.
Yeah.
What IBM does is it repackages the Sun JRE with the WebSphere that we send you. So what happens is you can remove the default JRE from your system, but WebSphere internally is still packaging the Sun JRE.
Oh.
And you're ending up using Sun JRE on that platform.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
So if you go to the JRE folder in the WebSphere and you do Java minus version, you'll see it's still the Sun JRE.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's basically specifically for the Solaris platform, right?
Yes.
I see.
Even though you think you have removed the Sun's thing, but
right.
You know, indirectly you're using Sun's through. Through IBM's. Yeah.
I see. Okay, that makes sense. So another quick question is that SDK and well, because people mentioned the IBM JVM, then people feel confused. Sun JVM. You're talking about SDK and JVM, you know, IBM SDK and IBM JVM, are they same thing?
Yeah, IBM JVM, of course, it has the support for this. See, JDK is the SDK is the standard developer kit, right?
Okay.
That is part, that's the basic part that Sun specifies, right?
Okay.
And we implement the SDK that is provided from Sun, right? With our own
packaging.
Yeah, packaging there.
Yeah.
It is SDK because SDK is the one that specifies what all the APIs that one has to use, right?
Okay.
Once you have used those things. And when it comes to executing that, our VM, our virtual machine, is where we execute that. So that engine is developed by WebSphere.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your information.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Surya, if I may add a couple of points over here.
Sure.
I know the gentleman from State Farm asked a question about where they can find the diagnostic guide for JVM 5.0, IBM JDK 5.0.
Yep.
For him, I had the information. If he could go to DeveloperWorks and just search for Java diagnostic guide,
it will
lead you to the page. That's the first hit. It has a diagnostic guide for 5.0 on there. The other link I had for them is the JVM, the 5.0 JVM IBM has a slightly different Verbose GC format, and if you use Verbose GC graphing tools, there's a tool on DeveloperWorks, it's called PMAT, that is P-M-A-T, and it would allow you to take the Verbose GC file and graphically show you how GCs are occurring and your heap usage.
Yep, that's a good information, Pish. Yeah, I thought maybe I can forward that, but they can get it from DeveloperWorks. But it's a good information. I can also send, but quickly you can go to the DeveloperWorks that page.
Yeah, and that page lists out all the diagnostic guides for all the JVMs we have had released in the past. So it's just one page, and you would get everything you want to.
Yeah, it is there in our references resources page on the presentation, so you can go from there. Okay,
next, we have a question from Bill O'Shea with GlaxoSmithKline. Please go ahead.
Hi. You may have mentioned this in your earlier conversation, but I missed it. Did you say that, or did you not say that, in version 6.1 you'll be using the or continuing to use the Sun JDK in WebSphere as in version 5, or will you be switching to the IBM JDK?
Well, we always use IBM's on the IBM platforms. We always use by default IBM's JDK, right? IBM, we have our own in-house JDK that we develop. But as Piyush mentioned earlier, right? If you are on a third-party, like machine or a Sun machine or HP machine, right? Where Sun and HP have their own JDK. If you are running a WebSphere on that, WebSphere uses the vendor's JDK and run it there. The gentleman was talking about Federal Reserve. He has removed it, the JDK from the third party of the Sun, and then still, WebSphere runs, of course, using its own IBM JVM. Well, IBM, under the covers, IBM bundles with Sun's JRE, and it will use that on Solaris or whatever third-party machine that you're running. So, yes, by default, on IBM platforms, IBM uses its own JVM, our own JDK.
Okay, but on the Solaris platform, it will, like in version 5 on the Solaris platform, it uses the Java 2 Runtime Environment Standard Edition based on Sun Hotspot?
Yes.
And that'll continue to be the same?
Yes.
Okay, and one of the reasons I ask is because we use JSTAT-D to get reporting out of the JVM using its built-in instrumentation, which at least in the current IBM JDK in our version 5.1 environment, you can't get any information with JSTAT-D.
Did you see that, Piyush, anytime? Or?
Yes, I agree with that. Let me clarify on that answer a little more. On the Sun and HP platform, we are going to use the Sun and HP provided JDKs. We just repackage it with WebSphere. On the other platforms, which are IBM platforms, which involves Windows, basically Intel and the P-Series and the Z-Series, IBM itself develops the JDK, and we package our JDK with it. The JSAT is a Solaris Sun-provided tool, and it works with the Sun JVM, but it does not work with the IBM JVM.
So your point is like it is not working on Sun platform itself?
No, I think what his question was, if we change the JVM to IBM JVM, that tool would not work in the future.
And that's one decision factor for us, whether to use WebSphere on Linux or WebSphere on Solaris, if it's going to continue to use the Sun JDK on Solaris, and we can continue to use JSTATD for our reporting and monitoring, that might be a reason for us to stay on Solaris rather than go to Linux. Unless there are similar tools that we might be able to use. You know, we haven't done a lot of investigation in the similar tools for Linux.
Exactly. I was about to add that. I'm pretty sure we should be able to provide you tools which could do similar kind of reporting activities on the IBM platforms.
Right. Although JSTATD is good because it's somewhat agnostic. We can use it against, non-WebSphere servers as well.
Exactly. It just works on the Sun JVM.
Right.
So wherever there's a Sun JVM, that would work.
Yeah.
We can provide you similar tools for IBM JVMs, and you would be able to use them on the IBM platforms.
Okay. I might be interested if you could point me to a comparative tool.
Yeah, if you can shoot me an email.
What you could do is you could probably tell us what you're trying to do with JSAT,
mm-hmm.
and we could try to point you towards tools on DeveloperWorks or such as which can do similar things on the IBM JVM.
That's great. Thank you.
And we have a follow-up question from Yushin Shu. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Last question. I basically attend several IBM, demo sessions or whatever a few months ago talking about WebSphere version 6.0 versus 5.1 or 5.0, because 5.0, 5.1 use whatever SDK. The version is 1.3.1, some version, and WebSphere version 6 is using 1.4. whatever version. So this is probably not a tuning related questions, but is there any problem when we let's say migrate existing applications which are currently running on WAS 5.0 to WAS 6.0.
Yeah, but there is no...
Any problems?
No, there are no problems because, we do provide the backward compatibility. So your 3.0 or 1.3x JDK application should equally run on... In fact, it should run better because our the performance of the JDK normally improves from 1.3 to 1.4. I think we saw around 7 to 12% or so.
I know IBM basically announced many times they shouldn't have any problems for migration from 1.3 point whatever to 1.4, according to the existing applications. But I heard something from some companies when they tried to migrate the applications needed to be a bit modified and. Recompiled it or for some reason, the existing applications
normally not
working on SDK 1.4.
Normally, if it should be like all the 1.4 JDK should support 1.3.
Sure, yeah.
But if you're using the other way, like for instance, you're using Java file, right? And there are some specific new features that are there. In Java file, and if you want to try that backwards, then you have to modify your application to remove those extra features that, and use them, replace them with the existing one that are supported in the earlier versions of JDK. But the principle, yes, you should be able to migrate, but, you know, as you were mentioning about some problems, maybe there are some bugs in the JDK like that have been fixed.
Okay.
You know, normally you should look for any iFixes for the JDK.
You said you mentioned that the extra features. Did you mean like some company uses some companies use a non-standard whatever development tool other than like WSAD before, and now the RAD and rational development tool?
No, that should not be a consideration here. When I told about the new features, for instance, Java 5 has a new
class
called Atomic Integer.
Okay.
Right.
I see.
Atomic Integer, it's not there in the earlier versions of Java, like JDK 1.4.2 or 1.3, right?
Okay.
And if your application is using that Atomic Integer,
right.
Definitely, your earlier JDK, if you're trying to, deploy, it won't recognize it, right? Then you have to change your application. But other than that, from earlier JDK, there should not be any problem in running them.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a specific issue of migration,
mm-hmm.
We will definitely would like to look at it. But
I see. The WSAD development tool 5.0 is using that SDK 1.3, right? My understanding. And the RAD 6.0 is using 1.4, right?
Yes.
I see. All right. Thank you very much.
I would like to add a couple of things to that. The other thing you want to keep in mind is when you migrate upwards, say from 5.0 to 6.0 or something like that, when you're changing the GRE from 1.3 to 1.4, what would happen over here is even on moving to the new GRE, you might not be completely exploiting all the features of the newer GRE. So like the new features which might be available with those GRE may not be being exploited with your application. And so for that purpose, your support groups in IBM may suggest that you modify your applications to incorporate those features, like Kuya just pointed out, Atomic Integer. Now, you would not be able to use it unless you modify your application when you go on to Java 5.0. And so you might miss out on such
things. Yeah, the functional device, you don't need to, if you want to stick to the functionality that you have and you're happy with that, you don't need to touch your application. And it should equally run well. If not, it should perform a little better in the newer JDK. But, if you're looking for the extra features, yes, of course, you may have to, change the application.
And we have no further questions from the phone audience.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. Remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site within the next day or two. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on this site. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Surya and Bhushan, for presenting today. Have a great day, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, this does conclude today's conference call. We thank you for your participation. At this time, you may now disconnect. Once again, thank you and have a great day.